All right, folks. Well, welcome back. We are now on to the support group section of this whole RFR program video that we're doing, or series of videos. And it would be kind of difficult for me to interview myself, so instead I brought along a great friend and actually a moderator of the online community that you're going to be hearing about later on, Kara Griffin. Kara, welcome.
Hi, thanks. I'm so glad to be here. Glad you didn't have to interview yourself. That would have been sad.
It would have been one of those things where I'm like turning to the right. So Eric, yeah. Like, how are you doing today? Like, and then turn to the left. Oh, Eric, I'm doing fine today.
I had a kid turn a project into me like that one time at school as a project. And I was so impressed with his video editing skills. And then I found out months later that actually he just had an identical twin. So.
They dress up in the same outfit or something.
Yes. Yes. I had no idea. It wasn't a video of him talking to himself. I was like, wow, how did you do that? It looks so realistic. It was.
So what kind of questions do you have about the support groups program? You don't know too much about it. So let's get this thing going.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would love if you could just give me kind of a brief description of what goes on at these support groups. What is it all about?
Well, the support groups, this is a, before COVID, we would all gather in person in a certain area. Like I co-founded the Springfield, Missouri Recovering from Religion support group, and we would meet in a library, and it would be myself and my co-host Alex. And then there'd be people who had heard about the meeting and they would show up. And for about 2 hours, we would just kind of sit around the table, and Alex and I would create a safe space for folks to kind of express their concerns, express their doubts, express their trauma and their struggle as they were in religion or transitioning out of religion. So this was a really unique opportunity, I feel, something that you don't really find anywhere else, especially if I am, let's say, still in a going to church every Sunday, even though I don't believe anymore. The doubts and the questions and the trauma that I have, I may not feel safe talking about that with the folks in that community. And so these support groups were set up to kind of specifically address that and be a place for folks to share and talk about their trauma and issues. It's not at all a professional therapy setting. This is peer support. And more often than not, the group leaders, the people who are hosting the meeting, have gone through something similar or going through something similar, and are able to utilize this opportunity just like a regular attendee would. But there are groups all around the world that meet. Like I said, before COVID, we would meet in person. And so it would be really geographic based. If you lived in Washington, D.C., and the nearest one was maybe Alexandria, that might be too far. Alexandria, Virginia, that might be too far to drive. But now, post-COVID, we have been able to add the virtual meetings with folks. And so instead of meeting in person, which we will eventually, just not right now, we'll start that back up. We're able to do it virtually. And so what's kind of neat is that now we don't have that geographical barrier and we're able to, but it's the same or very, very similar to meeting in person as well. But yeah, okay. That's kind of what it's about.
Yeah, that's great. I feel like that's really been one of the silver linings, if you can call it that, of this whole awful pandemic experience is now, you know, we can do things virtually and people have access to these sorts of things that they might not otherwise have had. Then it sounds like what you're saying is that the groups are all virtual right now, and they may go back to being in person later, but is it going to be the case that there will still continue to be virtual meetings after that as well?
Oh yeah, absolutely. A lot of people do want to go back to in-person, but there's no reason to also just purely cut out the virtual meetings. They have too many benefits. We talked about maybe it's too far to travel to the nearest support group meeting if it's in person. And so, but instead, if it was online, then you can just attend it in your PJs or the comfort of your own home or from wherever. In addition to that, as the local support group may not meet at a day and time that works for you, but you know, 1,000 miles away may work better for you. And so if that's virtual, you can attend that. If the spring, if you're in Springfield, Missouri, and 7 o'clock on a Wednesday doesn't work for you, but 10 o'clock on a Saturday does, you can join the Colorado Springs one or something like that. There's not much difference between them. We work to keep them very consistent throughout. And one of the things I wanted to say too is, you know, we talked about this being a safe place to share some of to share the trauma and the struggles and the doubts. In the previous video section that we talked about was the helpline. And I kind of think that the helpline is more like the emergency room. I have a crisis now. I need to talk to someone now, or I need a resource now. And so I'll go to the helpline. For me, the support groups are kind of like your general practitioner. This is where the long-term healing can be done and it is accomplished. This is what's going on with me right now, and you know, sharing about it, talking about it, maybe working on it over the next few weeks, and coming back next week with something else, or kind of the results of how you changed your behavior, if that was something you were going to be doing. So I kind of feel like this is where the long-term healing of the religious trauma, of the struggles and doubts, that's where it occurs, is here in the support group meetings. And it's one of my favorite things about RFR.
I've heard that about you. Yeah, I can definitely see why. It sounds like the kind of place where you can really get to know what's going on at a deeper level with people and you know, work through those issues. Yeah. So then walk me through this. What would happen at a typical meeting? Like, how would it go? Let's say I decide to show up to one for the first time. What can I expect?
Oh, excellent question. What you can expect is there's a big opening, or like not a big, like a, yeah, fanfare, and elephants come in, and no,
there's
clowns
music,
pop
right?
out of cars. Yeah, no. No, there's an opening where we really kind of set the rules, set the boundaries, set the expectations of the meeting. It's not a place for debating. It's not a place for folks work to convert to one religion or another or deconvert. That's not the space at all. And it definitely not the space. Harassment and things like that are not at all tolerated. The space is kept safe. Anonymity, if someone is in the closet and this first meeting that they've been to and they're really kind of nervous or just wanting to check it out because they're really scared at first, which, believe me, I can totally relate to, that's completely acceptable, and those rules are kind of set forth as well, or that expectation is set forth. And then there's a round of introductions, just brief introductions, 2 to 3 minutes. Hi, my name is Eric. I raised in a Baptist family. I started to have my doubts, blah, blah, blah. And I heard about RFR from a friend. And I'm really kind of struggling now with how to talk to my parents. The relationship seems to be different now. And it's at least on my end, now that I've no longer or have lost the belief or have got my doubts. Should I talk to them? You know, so really kind of talking about the religion they came out of, the struggles that they are currently struggling with, and the how they heard about the meeting. That's really kind of what the intros are. And what's neat is it gives us everyone who is there, it gives us a good idea of each other, whether or not I can relate to someone or not. So if someone has an issue that they're struggling with and they kind of say it in the intro, and I can relate to it, like, oh yeah, I've gone through that too. It's something that I can relate to right off the bat. So we're not necessarily strangers. It sort of somewhat helps to break the ice. But then after those intros is where the big main part of the meeting, the meat of the meeting is, it's the long discussion type of thing. Like I've come to the meeting and I've got a believing spouse, and I don't know how to raise the kid. I don't know how to talk with my spouse anymore. What do we do here? And so it's both the main part of the meeting is both a place for kind of sharing and getting out what has been bottled up for so long, as well as a chance for the other attendees to kind of empathize and listen and possibly even share some of their own experiences. Yeah, I've got the same issue. And the way we've kind of handled it is X, Y, Z. This is how we're raising our kids in a secular manner or a combination of religious and secular. And so this isn't a place necessarily where advice is given, because it's not like a professional setting at all. But instead, it's just a place for empathy and sharing and listening. And then after that's all done, these meetings are about 2 hours long, and the bulk of it is this discussion, the sharing part of it. But after that, we wrap it up with some resources. Hey, we've got the helpline. We got the Secular Therapy Project. Here are some local secular communities that you may find some like-minded people or make some new friends. So we kind of wrap it up all with that. And the meetings are usually about once a month. Every now and then, at minimum, they're once a month. Let me just say that. Every now and then, a support group leader has time to do maybe two meetings a month or so. But it's really up to the volunteers' schedule if they can do it more than once a week, but or more than once a month. But at very minimum, it's a two-hour meeting once a month. Great. That's what you can kind of expect.
Okay, yeah, that sounds really good. So what kind of topics come up? Is there like a theme every week if we're going to talk about issues pertaining to this or that? Or are there certain things that people are encouraged to share about or that you might stay away from?
Yeah, you know, there is, that's the unique thing about this. And one of the big things that we train the new support group leaders in is like, you're never going to know what's going to show up in the meeting because this isn't a discussion or debate type of program. We're not going to be talking about quantum theory or the evolution or how awful the ex-religion is. It's not that type of place. That's more of a debate or discussion group. This is a support group. And so what will show up are topics that people are struggling with that month or that week. We've had topics that are come up, like what I mentioned, relationships. How do I manage a relationship, or I'm struggling with this relationship right now. We have topics come up about anger and emotions. I'm so scared. I'm so angry. I'm so frustrated. We have topics come up about deep, deep trauma. I hate to say it, but it's absolutely true. There are sexual abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse, all tied to past religious, past experiences within the religious setting. And those things are shared. These things are shared because people feel safe to do so. At no point you have to share these things. You really are only encouraged to share them if you feel comfortable enough doing it. But yeah, those are really the main things that come up. But honestly, there are so many things that religion and politics are tied together. We don't focus on politics, but still family members and politics and religion, those relationships and worldviews are tied together really tightly and closely as well. There are a lot of changes that happen as people transition out of relationships. Folks who formerly were conservative may shift more into a more progressive worldview just because of leaving religion, and those things are surprising. There's just a lot of that kind of stuff that just shift inside our heads as we leave one worldview behind and try to rebuild another one. loneliness, confusion, all of these types of things show up in the support group meetings.
Yeah, I can definitely identify with all of that. I would have definitely benefited from one of these support groups when I was going through all of that and deconverting myself. Right? So I can definitely see how that would come up for people.
I've seen people come in. I've been a support group leader for 6-7 years now or so, and I've seen people come in who are at their wit's end. They're broken, they're scared, they're lonely, then they're given this opportunity to let out what's been bouncing around their head, what's been bottled up for so long. They're given that opportunity, and just speaking it out loud in a safe space without judgment, without ulterior motives, from the people listening, has done wonders for them. It's something that's, I say it's magical, even though I don't believe that magic actually existed, but it's something that is truly magical to see these people walk in completely dejected and then walk out feeling stronger and feeling clearer, and that light at the end of the tunnel of being brighter, that yes, I can get through this and I'm not alone. That's one of the biggest things. Coming to the support groups is you're not alone in what you're going through.
Yeah, that sounds really fantastic. I definitely remember feeling that way before, and so having a group where that was offered would certainly be a good thing. And yeah, I guess it's not magic. It's a secular support group, but that really doesn't sound quite as exciting.
No. But yeah, and that's the point is there's not at all an attempt to deconvert. This isn't like, hey, we're all atheists in here and you'll eventually become an atheist too, or a non-believer. That's not the point at all. Many folks come in as a Christian who have got their doubts, and as they're kind of sharing their doubts, they'll go back to the faith, which is perfectly fine. It's their journey, and we're not here to push them one way or another. We as leaders create the safe space just to get it out.
So it's not like, for example, like an AA group or something where we're going through the steps of how to give up religion and you need to adhere to this or that.
If there are those steps somewhere, I don't know where they are.
Yeah.
So if you've got access to some of those steps, then let me know. But that is, even if there was something like that, this is not what it's for at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's purely supporting people in their progress, whatever that may be leading towards or away from.
Yeah. And I don't really know of any other place that you can go to do this. Cause if, you know, for example, if I was in a church and I started to, I'm hearing how they're talking about, like I went to a church and on Mother's Day and the pastor was just saying awful things about how subservient women should be. And I'm looking around in this congregation of like thousands of people and people are nodding their heads, and it's disgusting to me. I couldn't say anything at the time, and I can't really necessarily say anything to my friends or family who are also in agreement with that and going to the church, but I can talk about it in the support groups. I can talk about it with the folks who are there to listen empathetically to this and my concerns. And then receive some feedback and hear some other folks kind of sharing their point and what they've gone through as how this topic might have affected them. So it's a unique place, a unique space, I think.
Yeah, that absolutely appeals to me too. Just that chance to kind of get out of your own head and kind of have a sounding board. Like, hey, is it me or
what? And so and more often than not, the people who come for the first time or the second time to these meetings, this is the very first time they've been able to express their concerns and express their doubts or even share their story. It's the very first time. And if any of you are like me, if I have got something that has been driving me nuts, if I have some cognitive dissonance that's going on, if I have to participate in something that I no longer believe in, and there's no safe space for me to talk about it, it's going to drive me nuts. It'll create a huge amount of emotional backup. And I see once people have the opportunity to share their stories, share their concerns, share their struggles and trauma, it's this weight that's been lifted off of their shoulders. It's almost like popping a pimple, but it's way more, maybe like the floodgates are opened and that pressure is released. Yeah, exactly.
That's a cyst.
Yeah. Yeah. Like those Dr. Pimple videos or whatever, just huge, massive, gross things come out and they feel so much better afterwards.
I'll confess, I've watched those before.
They're entertaining.
Yeah, it is. You want to see it, you know, get resolved.
Yeah. That's but great. Yeah, it's just that relief of the internal pressure. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. It's such an incredible thing to see.
Yeah. Well, and you said you've been doing this for 6 or 7 years now. Tell us about that. How'd you get into this and what's volunteering for this group been like for you?
Well, I was born Baptist and kind of was raised in that whole worldview and started to have my doubts as a teenager and left it. But I still was kept spiritual because I wanted that afterlife, that like if I died, I wanted to be able to live on somewhere else. But about 11 years ago, I had a dog that passed away, and for whatever reason it hit me, I'd never ever see her again. Like this was the last time, or like there wouldn't be a doggy heaven that I'd meet her in, or wouldn't get reincarnated and see her again. And it was surprising at the grief that hit me, and it just, the rug was pulled out from under me. My whole worldview collapsed at that point, and I found myself in a place where I'd never been before. I don't have this foundation of an afterlife or a spirituality or a deity that existed. I don't have that anymore. Where am I now? And so I didn't have any support. I didn't feel like I could talk to someone. I was in a very conservative area in the Midwest. And so I was struck with the depression. It sent me into depression for about 4 years. And I've been prone to that anyways for, mm-hmm. you know, ever since I was a kid, these depressive episodes. But as I was gobbling up, trying to rebuild my worldview by gobbling up books and articles and videos and podcasts, I found a secular community in my area and joined it and made some new friends. And one of them, Alex, came to me and was like, hey, there's this thing called Recovering from Religion. They have a support group program. Why don't we start a support group here in Springfield, Missouri? And I looked into it and I'm like, all right. I didn't feel like I was quite ready to do it because I still was struggling. I was still going through quite a bit of stuff. It was a surprising number of things that I had to weed out from my old religious worldview. Mm-hmm. But so we did it. We started it up. And what was neat is not only was I able to host, and I think Alex went through the same thing, but I was also able to participate. I was also able to share with some of the things that were going on with myself. And I feel like that's kind of like maybe a support group, maybe somewhat of a misnomer, because it's not like there's a social worker who's never done drugs trying to run a support group for drug addicts or former drug addicts or something like that. We are not separate from the issues that are going on as opposed to maybe a social worker might be. So we're able to become affected by these meetings and grow out of these meetings. And I was able to reap the benefits of that too. I've volunteered thousands of hours with Recovering from Religion, but I think I've gotten way more out of it than I've put into it. I've made incredible friends like yourself. I'm a better person because a lot of these concerns and these doubts I've been able to express and get receive the empathy, receive the care, and listen to some other people's stories and how they also struggled with it and what they've gone through. And I've had some amazing opportunities as well. Being the director for the last 2 years of the support group programs, I've been able to watch it grow and put my own kind of fingerprints inside of the program, which I hope will last for quite a while. I've gotten some, there's also these like tiny things that I get out of it, like just the skill of hosting a meeting with a group of people, you know, that's actually a skill in and of itself, kind of getting them having somewhat of an agenda every week. And just, you know, the same agenda every week with the opening and the intros and stuff like that. But
I always have agendas going. The feminist agenda, we got the gay agenda. I mean, you know, I'm here for agendas.
But so just like the skills like that, like hosting a meeting has been something that I've learned. Active listening and coming into a situation curious as opposed to with my own agenda. Those are some fantastic benefits I've gotten out of this, just volunteering, and it's been well worth it.
And I mean, isn't that something we need more of these days? Having dialogue with people and listening.
Yeah, exactly.
It's probably refreshing just to go to a meeting and experience that as opposed to shouting at the TV or something.
I'm an introvert, and so hosting these meetings can be exhausting for me. Mm-hmm. But the benefits that I get out of it far outweigh. One of the things that I struggled with coming out of or transitioning out of this religion or spiritual worldview was, what is now my purpose? What is now the meaning of my life? Before, I thought, okay, there was a deity who created me and has this purpose, and it's my job to find it and then enact it. But without that, without a supernatural being, I'm like, it's now me. It's up to me to create the purpose for my own life and what gives me meaning, what gives my life meaning. And for me, it was like, ultimately can kind of get boiled down to, I'd like to leave this world better than I found it. And working with these people and seeing the trauma, seeing the pain and the suffering reduced just a little bit really goes far to providing that meaning in my life and being that purpose as to why I'm here. And this being a support group leader has really been a major part of that.
Yeah, that's amazing. I really like how you put that. You know, and it's secular, but it's magical. That's right. But I mean, it sounds like, I mean, you're describing it's helping people fill in those holes that maybe they've felt like they've been left with now that this worldview is gone, or they may be questioning it. Now, you know, there's something softer to land on, so to speak.
Yeah. It's like, you're not alone, and what you're not crazy in what you're thinking. And like your concerns, that's okay to have them, as opposed to kind of quashing them. Like, you shouldn't think like that. That is not helpful to folks who are struggling with trauma or pain.
Yeah. Just smile more. You'll feel better.
Fake it till you make it. No, that doesn't work in these kinds of situations at all.
Yeah. That's not what that's for. That's great. Yeah. Well, so what else should we talk about the support groups? Is there anything we haven't touched on yet that we should?
Yeah. There was something that I forgot to say. Each one of these support groups are the geographic based ones, the one like in Springfield, Missouri, or Los Angeles, California, mm-hmm. or Sydney, Australia. Those are all geography based ones, even though the virtual meetings may be happening in those groups and you can attend from anywhere in the world. It still has like a geographic home, and those are all found, they each have their individual meetup group. So we're using Meetup as a place to have these groups. And there's currently, this is fall of 2021, and there's currently 64 groups around the world, Canada, Australia, US, Mexico even, and we're growing more and more internationally. Most of them are based in the US. But we've also set up two special groups that are not attached to geography anywhere. And that's the virtual chapter and the women's chapter. There is a specific chapter for women only, for the folks who identify as female. The virtual chapter, those are designed for, say you're in Germany or you're in Italy and you need to talk to somebody. That's kind of designed to be at those time, the times that would work for the European or African or Asian countries. It's all, it's very fluid, and you can attend it even if you're in the US and your local one doesn't fit in your schedule. So that's the virtual chapter. The women's chapter is unique, and it's specifically for female identifying people, individuals. And, I'm a man, obviously. I'm straight, and I can't necessarily identify or fully understand the trauma that women have gone through, although I can hear it and know and understand that it happened and it was impactful for them. But this kind of trauma, from what I hear, people and it's women may not feel comfortable sharing in a mixed group. Like if I'm there as a man and the woman has had some traumatic things that have happened, whether physically or emotionally or sexually, she may not feel comfortable sharing that just because I'm a man, which is fine. And so we have set up that space specifically for folks to help them be able to share those types of things without someone like myself in there.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's like you were describing all the kinds of trauma that people have experienced, and with, you know, some religions in particular, there's sort of particularly sinister ways that women can be impacted. So that makes a lot of sense to me that would be an option for support as well.
Yeah, I've heard those stories too. There's some folks who have been brave enough to and courageous enough to share those mm-hmm. In the support group meetings. And it breaks my heart to hear it. But I also am pleased that they feel comfortable enough and grateful that they feel comfortable enough to share that with me, that my job in creating a safe space for them has been a success.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And also, let me ask about those women's groups as well. Would those be available as well to non-binary people or even trans people who mm-hmm. might have experienced religion or been experienced by religion as a woman at the time that they were in it and may have had some of those experiences?
Absolutely. Basically, if you identify as a male, this isn't the place for you, the women's chapter.
Okay, fair enough. But there's some flexibility there, given that, when it comes down to that kind of thing, there's, you know, within some religious organizations, there's a lot of repression of people's gender identities that, you know, it's, they're being put in a slot that maybe they didn't feel like fit them, but they could have experienced, you know, that trauma, you know, as a result of that happening to them, and then still need to process that.
Yeah. And I would love to have an LGBT chapter eventually. It obviously, someone like myself wouldn't be appropriate, the appropriate person to lead it. But we just need a volunteer to kind of step up and go through the training and be dedicated to lead that. And that goes for any other areas that we don't have chapters in, or even if we do have chapters, we can always use co-hosts. Like, if you're in the Northeast or Northwest Arkansas area, we could definitely use another co-host for that chapter as well. But we have training for new support group leaders that really kind of gets you up and going, I think, in a very successful way. Like, you're not necessarily just thrown to the wolves for your very first support group meeting. We now have the ability, with the virtual meetings happening all the time, to let the new support group leaders experience what they're like, and then train them in some tools to help them be an empathetic listener and deal with situations that may come up, and then have a couple of meetings with a person like me who's experienced and has done a lot of support group meetings, and then they feel comfortable enough to host meetings on their own. So the training that we've got, training program we got, is fantastic for new support group leaders too.
That does not surprise me at all, given the helpline training is pretty intensive, and it sounds like it's maybe related to that. Those are, like you said, great life skills anyway.
Yeah.
So,
Kara, thank you so much for coming in and asking me some questions and interviewing me about the support groups. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm glad to be able to help out any way I can. And this has actually been really fascinating to me to learn about the support groups more. I may have to take you up on that offer, advertising that training. So,
well, folks, that's going to wrap it up for the support group meeting section, and or video at least. And up next, I think we're going to have this secular therapy project conversation, which I've already had, and it was a really good one. All right. So thanks for sticking around, and I'll see you, or at least you'll see me on the next one. Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There, you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts, or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.